MLS Aces episode 145. This is your host, Tom Sweezy. We are back, and by we, I mean everyone. Jason Vivang is here.
Oh, that was like a cue for me to speak.
We're back and firing on all cylinders.
Bro, you realize that was like Jason Vivang is here, and then you were going to be like, and, you know? Like, I need more info.
Sam Nelson is here.
Oh, that was my cue.
I really hope you didn't do that as a joke.
I'm drinking, man. I've been drinking a lot during this quarantine. It's not healthy.
Guys, we're recording this at 8 a.m., so you know he has an issue.
I can get away with it. I don't know about you guys, but I can get away with it. Yeah, it's work.
You're really hammered at 8 a.m., Tom.
I'm HR, so I'm getting drunk at 8 a.m. It's tough. It's really tough.
I just realized Tom's HR. Tom is Toby from The Office.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm the worst HR person ever, I think. I curse. I just don't give two fucks. Like, it's bad.
Or maybe you're the best HR person ever.
Well, maybe that too, maybe. But I do have to say, before we dive into the actual stuff and kind of lose track of where we are, episode 145 is brought to you guys by Roughneck Scars and Icarus FC. What have you guys been doing? I'm bored, I'm missing soccer, but we also haven't talked in like 2-3 weeks. How you guys doing? What are you doing? Jason, I'll start with you. It's enough of a question and directed at you for you to answer.
Should I go yet?
Yeah, right now. Okay.
I'm pretty good, you know. I'm just grinding away, working. Obviously, mainly from home. But yeah, I mean, I'm getting kind of bored, honestly. Not being able to leave the house, it's rough. It's really rough.
I know. I agree with you. It's getting rough. It's getting bored. But I guess my mindset is like, do what you got to do now, and we'll get this done now for getting everything back to normal. And then once we're back to normal, hopefully, cross our fingers, we're all good. But
yesterday I was going a bit crazy, cooped up.
I've had my bad. Definitely. Sam, have you been doing? What have you been doing to pass the quarantine time?
Oh, I've been staying up with the baby, watching TV, still cruising through The Wire. I've been playing Assassin's Creed. And daughter is eating food, or eating like actual baby food instead of formula. So like, man, it's just it's a whole new world.
Thanks, man.
Chicken and rice.
Not even like pureed carrots.
Have you any of the old DC United throwbacks games that MLS have been putting on?
I haven't watched any like the YouTube ones. I still have recorded I think it was our first MLS Cup against the Galaxy that the ESPN had done. I still have that recorded. I made Carter watch it with me so that she could learn what we used to be good.
Well, I mean, we've been passing a lot of time as well, Sam, you and me. Well, not a lot of time. This just started this past week, but we did
a lot of time, though.
I mean, it did take a lot of time, way more time than it should have.
You didn't have my incredible IQ helping you out.
Because Jason didn't have a freaking PlayStation.
Yes.
right back at you, buddy.
The IQ didn't help you out in what to buy. But we started the MLS Aces FIFA League. We're streaming it on Twitch 2 nights a week. We're playing some games. 10-game regular season with 6 players. However long that's going to take, that's math. And then we're going to do a little playoff system and then have an MLS Aces Cup champion. So all on PlayStation. Like I said, we're streaming it on Twitch. Twitch.tv/MLS Aces? I think that's it. If you're interested, if that's your thing, hop on over there. I've been posting on Instagram and Twitter the days that the games are happening. So be on the lookout there. Do you guys have anything else we need to update that I'm forgetting about?
It's been an incredible year to be a first-time season ticket holder.
Oh, no.
That's all I'll say. It's been rough.
Never thought about that.
That just hit me really hard. Wow.
I was so excited, guys.
Question mark?
What'd you say?
I said it might get better next year, question mark.
Yeah, I think I'll probably just roll him over to next year. I hope.
I'm still a Fire fan. It won't get better, man.
Oh, my goodness.
No, Tom. It can really only get better.
I don't know what was worse right there.
I did forget, actually, a few things to update on our end. I haven't done this in a little bit, so if you guys want to learn more about us, you should go over to MLSaces.com. There's a little more information about all of us, as well as some blogs that we post. I just put out a blog that I really enjoyed writing up. It was a CONCACAF 11, but only one player per country, so I really have to dive into some of the smaller CONCACAF teams. So that was a fun one that I put up. It actually got a decent amount of hits, so thank you to everyone who read and commented. On Twitter, we are at MLS Aces, Instagram, MLS_Aces. And if you guys want to support us, join the Ace Holes, get into our Slack channel and talk soccer with us a little more often, MLSaces.com/donate. Now we are up to speed, I'm pretty sure, guys.
Man, I just went through our website real quick. The fact that only Tom and Dave have pictures on here does make me sad. Jason, we got to add some pictures.
I thought I had a picture on there.
I thought I did too.
Have messaged 100 times.
I've sent you so many pictures, my friend.
Tom's just got like a gallery of Jason photos.
I also may forget. Yeah. All right. Well, directly after this, you two send me pictures and I will put them up on the website.
Okay. Also, I want to change my thing since I no longer homebrew. All
right. Well, that's fine. Then you gotta tell me these things.
Yeah, shit.
All right.
The website looks freaking awesome. So just saying. People who, you know, want to come and check out the website. It's pretty great.
Look. Yeah, it's called Soccer, You Wankers.
You Wankers. I'll never forget that lost episode.
Fuck, I forgot that was from the lost episode and you have it on the website.
Hey, that's fine. In my head, it works. I did want to talk about this. So last week I tweeted out that I created a soccer quiz on a website called Sporkle.com. I just remembered the website from like high school when like we would take like stupid quizzes. Yep. So I created a soccer quiz you have to name in 10 minutes every single or as many professional clubs in the United States as you could. So from MLS, NWSL, USL Championship, USL League One, and NISA. Sam, I know you don't think they count as professional league, but if you Google professional soccer leagues in America, NISA does come up. I had to include them. Sam, I'll dive into you first. How many did you get of the 93?
Oh, I didn't take it.
God
damn. That was really your homework.
That was your one homework assignment. You had 3 weeks to sleep.
No, I refuse to take a quiz where NISA counts. So,
guys, how come the Tampa Bay also in 3 weeks doesn't want any answers?
Guys, you really expected me to do homework?
I typed in the Tampa Bay Rowdies probably 7 times. Never showed up.
I think you're spelling Rowdies wrong there.
I definitely was.
Jason, how many did you get?
I got 42.
All right. It's less than half.
My first like 10 teams were the Fire and all the NWSL teams.
That makes sense.
And then I went through and I got the MLS team.
Yeah, I mean, like, so there were some people talking a little shit and giving me some shit about,
Yeah, it was a crap quiz.
Yeah, people were just telling me, like, a piece of shit, and I was like, wow, put together.
Goddamn the shit.
Jeez, someone's angry outside. What's going on?
Can I go off on a tangent real quick?
We would love it.
Okay, it's about soccer, so, like, I think that counts. So why like is a there a WSL team in California?
No, I know. I was going to say, there's been talk of, like, Barcelona pairing with, like, LAFC to make one.
Yeah, and yet, here we are. The only future team, according to Wikipedia, is in Louisville, the Louisville Proof, which is not really a good name.
No, it's not.
So that's where we're at right now. Meanwhile, I just want a team in California, because I feel like that only makes sense.
I think there will be. Barcelona has approved, like, their board has approved, like, an NWSL team. And it's probably going to be with LAFC in California.
That makes sense, especially since now Well has a team.
I have 2 points. One, I had a fucking happy birthday parade going on outside. That's one.
And was it your birthday?
No, it's not my birthday. It's my neighbor's.
Happy birthday, Tom.
God birthday. Damn it. They're still going. And
better than the train.
There's like 15 cars down my fucking block right now.
Oh my gosh, happy and, birthday, Tom.
Two.
Why aren't you out there thanking them?
Fuck them. With the whole NWSL thing that you were saying, Jason, do you see a problem with this? Because I was actually talking about this with my friend Joe, who's in the Slack channel, and he's in the FIFA league, unlike you, Jason.
Bro, how are you going to hate me? Like, we didn't have this league. I bought a console, like, 5 fucking years ago. I'm sorry. I didn't anticipate this.
To get to the question I had, do you have a problem with, like, big European teams coming in, like, buying an NWSL, like, franchise, like Lyon buying out the Rain. Sam, like you were saying, like with an LA team, I know, like Jason, you said Barcelona, like they're approved to buy an NWSL franchise out in LA. Like, doesn't that like kind of, I don't know, isn't that like double contamination? If that's a, you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. I don't know. Like, right now, the league is just trying to grow. And I think that like Lyon buying the Rain is going to help that process of growth. Like, when you think, like, the Lyon is the top of women's soccer, club soccer. Like, they're incredible. They have, like, insane team every year. They get, like, pretty much all the best players and just dominate every year. So I think they can bring, like, a decent amount of credibility to the league and just, like, help it, you know, funding-wise, because they're one of, like, the few women's soccer team that really funds the team almost as much as the men's team. But I don't know. I mean, I see where there would be an issue, or, like, people would have an issue with it, but I think at this point, it's probably going to help the league.
All right, because, I mean, like, I guess, you know, you could also set things up with, like, a friendly between Lyon and the Seattle Rain, like, a few times a year. Or, sorry, Olympic Lyon Rain a few times a year.
Well, they
and
have the Not the Cup.
I'm stupid.
What's it called?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's the cup that's held in America. For
yeah, and clubs. It's What is this cup called?
You should know everything about this.
Oh, International Champions Cup. There you go. And it's usually like four teams. I think typically Lyon's in it. North Carolina Courage are almost always in it. And then, you know, it just kind of depends on who are the better teams. But they have that like every summer. Well, they probably not this summer, but
why, Jason?
That's usually in North Carolina. And like that's a pretty big tournament, I would say, for women's soccer in the U.S.
I just feel like it's a whole opportunity for growth and like more games played like internationally and kind of all of that stuff. So I really think like it's good, but it's also bad in another way. I don't know. I'm torn on this.
I think it's good now. Long term, I don't know how much I would like it.
Yeah. No,
but, like some of these teams struggle to stay up. You know, like Kansas City had to rebrand and move to Utah. Boston recently moved, and I think that's the old Courage. Or no, New York. New York Flash, I think, became the Courage. I could be wrong on that, honestly, but off the top of my head, that might be right. But, I mean, some of these teams have not, you know, been able to sustain for very long, and a team like Lyon helping out the Rain, and maybe, like, now they have a little bit of stock in the league itself, might be able to help out some other teams that maybe struggle a little bit more.
All right, cool. Sam, do you have any more NWSL or women's soccer talk that you have questions about? Or Jason, you too?
I actually do.
Let me hear it.
So I just sent a link in this chat, so go click on it. But I just bought this recently.
This is just showing off.
And it's maybe one of the coolest jerseys I've ever seen in my entire life. for the listeners, it's called the Neighborhood Kit. It's a Chicago Red Stars jersey, and it's basically like a flag kit for the Chicago flag. But the blue stripes, I mean, if people don't know the Chicago flag, I recommend looking it up. But the blue stripes are just the names of all the neighborhoods in the city.
Do like fucking the Chicago Red Stars and Forward Madison just put out the best two soccer kits like every single
agreed.
Year.
I think US soccer. I think the Red Stars have maybe the best full set of merch consistently, always.
My God, like I want this jersey and I know nothing about Chicago.
What chat did you send it?
I put it in a not in Slack. The Google Doc. My bad.
Oh okay.
I've seen
pictures. It's a beautiful jersey.
I love it.
Simple, but it's detailed. Mm-hmm.
It has like that. Like their old jersey had a similar style, but it was like the city, like plan view almost.
It's fire. I lived in Chicago, I'd like definitely buy it, but I'm not gonna buy one to save it for people from Chicago.
Yeah,
I should not own that kit.
They sold out so fast, like, so I got it like the first day it came out, but they were already back ordered to like July.
Shit.
Well, good for you. I mean, Sam, like you said, like if I lived in Chicago or if I had a connection to Chicago, I'd buy that in a heartbeat. But like, I don't. Like, I mean, like, look, if they need the money, I'll waste the money. But
honestly, I was just really bringing it up because I think it's a sweet jersey, and that we need more. Jerseys like that in MLS, honestly, like get Adidas.
Not gonna happen. Adidas designs are
Nike.
Bullshit.
Buy some MLS, please.
For sure. I mean, I agree with you guys there. But to kind of keep the women's soccer conversation going, get a little serious, I guess, which is always a fun time during a pandemic, is to get serious. The U.S. women's national team, so if you guys didn't know, and for the listeners if they didn't know, and I'm not like a legal expert, so I'm probably going to fuck some things up in the middle of this, so believe me for like the overall, but just don't, maybe like some minor details I might fuck up. But the U.S. women's national team had, God damn it, who's
happy birthday!
And Tom, you just wanted us to sing happy birthday. You could have just told us.
You didn't have to.
You guys record tonight.
A procession while we're on the podcast.
Look, it's nice, but like, fuck off. I'm trying to record a podcast, okay? Thank you. The U.S. Women's National Team, they've had two court cases, both going on at the same exact time against the USSF. One of them just recently got dismissed within this past week and a half, and that was the equal pay court case. So pretty much a judge ruled out in California, I'm pretty sure, that the U.S. Women's National Team didn't really have a case against the U.S. Soccer Federation, saying that, you know, just because the men didn't make a World Cup, it hurt their how much money they get, and that they have the same opportunities to make the same amount of money. I'm pretty sure, like, I'm giving that in a very general statement, but that's pretty much what it was ruled down to. So that court case got dismissed. So I'll start with that. And Jason, since you are our leading women's soccer correspondent, I want to hear your
opinions. Correspondent.
That's a word, man. It's a word.
I like
that. I show words.
Jason, I'm going to update on the website. MLS Aces women's soccer correspondent.
All right. I mean, so for me, like, it's obviously a pretty big setback for the players and for women's soccer as a whole. And it really does kind of suck. But the only thing we can say is, like, they're going to probably try and appeal, which is a super long process within itself. I think it's like 12 to 20 months I saw. But I mean, this team is like, they're all fighters and they've been doing this for a long time. Like if you guys have, I mean, I know you probably know of Caitlin Murray, who's like a pretty big women's soccer reporter and writer.
Oh yeah.
And she wrote a book called The National Team, which I definitely recommend reading if you guys haven't. It's basically just like the history of the women's national team, really going back pretty far to the 90s. might even go back further. I can't remember, but really, really great book. So shout out to her because that book is really great. But it really just kind of shows how long they've been fighting, how much they've had to deal with. She's gotten like stories from the players themselves throughout, you know, the entire history of the team. And like, while this is a setback, I fully expect them to just keep going ahead with their fight. Like, they deserve everything that they can get because they're just a phenomenal team and they're really fun to watch. And, you know, any money I can try and help them out with, whether it's like going to games or, you know, buying merchandise from NWSL and stuff, like, I recommend doing, because like I said, I mean, they deserve it. They give us tons of entertainment. They're funny. They're a fun team to watch. Like, I don't know. I don't have a ton to say on this. I think it's just they're going to keep fighting and we can support them in as any way we can.
And just to quickly touch on a point you said before I get over to you, Sam, they are going to be appealing this ruling. And like you said, Jason, that's like a very long process that they're going to be fighting down. But like you said, they're definitely going to do it. From some of the court reports I was reading and like the information around this that I was reading, it didn't seem like the U.S. women's national team, like the group that was representing them, did the greatest job in arguing for their case for equal pay. Mm-hmm. So I would really like to see, like, obviously when the information comes out during this appeal process and everything like that, maybe a better legal stance and a legal fight on their side. So, because they do deserve the money. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I would like to see them maybe tackle the situation a little differently and get the money and get the that pay that they deserve.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not a legal person. Like, I literally know next to nothing about how the workings of the court systems work. So I can't really speak on that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I just think
I should speak on it either, but that's just what I was reading.
And you did good kind of relaying what you've read. I just, like, I try to read that stuff, and I'm just like, I have no idea what is being said here.
Sam, I wanted to toss it over to you. Do you have any opinions on the equal pay lawsuit that was dismissed?
I mean, I have opinions, but I was going to say, do I have anything to add to the conversation? Not really. I mean, I think the U.S. Women's National Team, I think it's very surprising that someone would say that they have the access and the ability to make the same amount of money that the men do, because they just flat out don't. Like, that's the way FIFA has it set up. That's the way the U.S. Soccer Federation has it set up. They don't, and I find it kind of ridiculous that someone would look through everything and see that. So I hope that, you know, during the appeals process, it really comes out how clear it is, because I don't know. I find the whole thing fairly ridiculous. Those women are the best in the world at what they do, like in the world. Like, it's crazy when you really you say that, and they're getting paid like peanuts in comparison.
It's crazy. Beside like them being paid so little, like the facilities that they get are way worse. I mean, there's
like
good
that Canada World Cup on turf,
and they're staying in way worse hotels typically than the men's team is. Getting like basically having to take like public transportation for a long time to even get to the games and get to places. So it goes beyond just how much are they getting paid. I think there's much more to it than just like, hey, the men are making this much, the women are making this much, and that's that. It's more of, besides them just making less, it goes into detail of they're just flat out not, like you said, they're not getting the same ability to, you know, have the same facilities and things like that.
Jason, you made a really good point there, because the equal pay lawsuit was dismissed, but the equal rights lawsuit is still in effect and is still going on. So the equal rights lawsuit, this is what I was reading, is the lawsuit that is going to be negotiating issues and talking about the issues like team travel, like the conditions that they play on, you know, compared to obviously the men's game and everything like that. Medical treatment that they receive compared to the men's game, that they want equal rights between the men's and the women's national team on all those topics. So pretty much like you said, like travel to the stadiums, medical facilities, locker room quality, field quality, TV quality, like that they're broadcast and marketed the same way as the men's team, everything like that. So that lawsuit is still going on, and that one the women's team got into the next steps with. So that's a positive that that one's still going on and that the judge is still hearing out that case, at least, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
All right. Do you got anything else you want to say regarding national team women's soccer, club women's soccer, anything like that?
I mean, I have like a little transition comment.
Go ahead. I was going to transition into the interview that we have, if that was cool, and then we pick up some MLS talk after the interview.
I just want to say, I think it's really funny how you're like, hey, we're going to just start talking about some serious stuff, and then I just heard... That was it, really? I thought that was funny.
I'm going to do an ugly transition into an interview that I had with FC Cincinnati goalkeeper Bobby Edwards. Bobby has an interesting story. He took the road less traveled to make his way into professional soccer. So at this point, sit back and enjoy the conversation I had with Bobby. Joined by the pride of New Jersey and goalkeeper for FC Cincinnati, Bobby Edwards. Bobby, how you doing on this wonderful quarantine day?
Well, after that introduction, I honestly am doing much, much better today. But, yeah, can't complain at all. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
I mean, I have to start with this. I started with it in the introduction because I'm a New Yorker. You're from Jersey. We're pretty much, you know, the same thing at this point. But growing up in Parsippany, New Jersey, how is that soccer culture? I know you played your high school ball in Newark, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
So people who don't really know the New Jersey area, Newark, not the best town, but, I mean, apparently it has development in soccer players.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there. And for me, I think New Jersey is a really special place, especially when it comes to soccer. It's a melting pot. So you've got a lot of different cultures and ethnicities all kind of blended into one. And you kind of see that with the fusion of the soccer culture there. And Parsippany was a cool place. You know, the first coach I ever had when I was just started my travel soccer, Parsippany Soccer Club, was my dad. So, you know, it was a special thing. And that's kind of where I just learned to love the game. It's where I fell in love with the game. But then, yeah, I mean, Newark was where I spent my high school at St. Benedict's Prep, which was amazing. It shaped me into who I am. But Newark's you hit it honestly right on the head. It's not necessarily the greatest of places. You know, it's had a lot of history, but for what it is, especially St. Benedict's, it's got a lot of talented soccer alums. You know, Claudia Reyna, Tab Ramos are like the big stars from there. But yeah, that was a culture shock, but then quickly became my home away from home. So I'm very grateful for that place.
I mean, so like I just coming from my personal side of it, I never played soccer growing up, right? Up until probably I'd say close to 8 years ago, I hated the sport. And then for some reason, I don't know, I sat down with my friends one summer. I think it was the year I graduated high school. That summer going into college, sat down, I watched the World Cup, absolutely fell in love with it. And then that kind of led me into my love of Major League Soccer and wanting to start this podcast and just getting way, you know, incorporated into the U.S. kind of soccer culture. So you said, and you mentioned that your dad was your first coach and he was the one that kind of got you to fall in love with the sport. Did he have a team growing up that, like, when you were young, like, you sat down and you watched that team with them, like, every single Saturday?
Honestly, no, we didn't. I mean, it's funny because, you know, my dad, he was also a goalkeeper, but he was one where he played at a little small D3 and it was more for just enjoyment of the game. It was a brand new sport when he was growing up. You know, it was, wasn't what it was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, my family, that's the one thing that is in our family history is goalkeepers. You know, my cousin is Brian Edwards, who's he played at Wake Forest and won the national championship back in 07. Went on to have an MLS career, played at Toronto and San Jose and overseas. And then he's actually coaching now at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, the 49ers. So goalkeeping has just kind of been in my family. As far as teams from a young age, you know, it wasn't really one we'd watch religiously. I obviously, you know, the Metro Stars before they became Red Bull was the one when I was a real young kid. which was cool. But yeah, it was just more or less, it's different. Like for anybody that plays a sport, they know that there's soccer players and there's goalkeepers. It's always a classic joke. And like, I am, you know, I play soccer, but you know, I'm not a soccer player. I'm a goalkeeper. So it was, I fell in love with the craft, definitely. So while everyone else was kind of, you know, idolizing the goals and all the tricks, you know, I would always idolize the saves, and that was kind of how it was. But it was cool, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's why that goalkeeper union's so strong, man. Come on, you know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was reading online that you're 6'6", correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you said your dad played goalkeeper, your cousin Brian played goalkeeper as well. Are you just like a family of just very tall people?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely on the taller side. I think I am the crown champion of height in the family at the current moment. So yeah, we're definitely taller people for sure. But that does help. I won't even deny it. It does help in goalkeeping for sure.
I'm in major respect there. I come from a family of tall people too. Like, we all go out to dinner and everyone just stares at us. My dad's 6'7", I'm 6'4", my sister's 6'1". You know, like, it's just, I feel your pain, but it's kind of nice to be part of that tall family.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that's always a joke I make, is it's a blessing and a curse, and I wouldn't trade it for sure. I mean, I do, you know, it's awesome and it helps me in a lot of ways, but like getting into a tiny little car and then like flying on an airplane, it's just, these are things that are normal for everybody else, but for us, they're like very painful.
Yeah, like buying jeans. I think that's my worst experiences I've ever had, man.
100%. I can't remember last time I bought jeans in an actual like brick and mortar store, because they just don't carry any of the sizes that I'd need.
No. And I mean, like, same thing with me for like shoes. Like, I wear a size 14. I don't know the last time I bought a pair of shoes like in a store.
Absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is too, is that I'm actually a size 14 as well in my shoes. But when I hit size 13, 14 around high school, and by that time, to find a size 14 soccer cleat is almost impossible. Like, you're stuck with either like the classic Copas, which are a solid boot, but I wasn't really trying to rock those. So I had to just cram my feet into these 13s, a size smaller. Now I just have like feet that have just been crammed in so long, I've morphed them into 13s, which is probably not good for the longevity of my feet health, but it is what it is, I guess. Trials and tribulations.
I mean, I play in like a men's league now, and yeah, I shove my feet into a size 13, and I'm not gonna say I'm the most skilled soccer player, but I mean, like, I'm decently young. I think we're the same age, 24, and so I play center back, and I just clear the ball constantly. That's just my role. And so
I mean, 100%. And plus, when I was a little kid and I was picking a position, and I was like, well, I'm gonna pick the one where I don't have to run around too much and
easy
thing. So center back, you just stay back there and be the big presence. That's right with the goalkeepers.
Well, you are also a big presence in net, obviously. You, like we said, you played your high school ball at St. Benedict's in New Jersey, in Newark, New Jersey. Then you worked your way. Did you play in USL League 2 before or after college?
Both. So I played with the Red Bull 23s for 3 summers.
Okay. My
freshman, sophomore, junior summers. And then I went to South Carolina for 2 years. So one right before my post-grad year, because I took a fifth year after I got injured one year. And then after that, I went back to South Carolina again. So I spent a good amount of time in that league, which was fantastic. My last summer in the USL 2 was a really awesome year, and I think that's kind of what set me up for my most recent kind of growth in my career.
So I want to first touch on the Red Bulls U23 squad. Obviously, like, I mean, I'm taking a guess. I'm taking an assumption here that, you know, you were involved in the Red Bull system early on just because, like, you were in that New Jersey area type of thing. Like, how does that work, like, getting into the Red Bull U23 squad?
Yeah, I wasn't actually ever technically on the academy as a kid. I had kind of been around it. But when I was growing up in that age, and it's interesting to see actually what's going to happen because it's all changed. It was this battle between high school and academy. And when I went into freshman year of high school, I chose to go to St. Benedict's. And that was what I primarily played. So I spent my time at St. Benedict's. And then I think my sophomore year of high school, the rule came where you couldn't play academy and high school. So you had to pick one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose St. Benedict's, and that worked for me long term. But I had trained there, and I'd been around it growing up because it was right there, like you said, but I was never actually a part of the club until I got to the 23s, and it had just kind of been a thing where, you know, the 23s were a team. They were obviously looking to put a team together. I wanted to play at a high level, and they had kind of knew who I was. So it worked out really well, and I think that was definitely an important move for me at that age, is to see that kind of talent and to see that kind of, you know, professional setting, to kind of continue to build upon. I think that was really good for me.
Who was around the Red Bull senior squad when you were there for the U23s? Was it Robles in net?
Yeah, Luis was there, and I actually got a couple sessions to train with Luis, and I tell you what, he's honestly one of the nicest guys I've met, and I remember I was super nervous, and he was just like such a chill dude, and you know, was took an interest in getting to know who I was, and it's little things like that which I'm sure, you know, he doesn't even remember the conversation, but it was a very profound moment for me, and I appreciated it. But yeah, I mean, there was Grella was there, Wright Phillips was there. You know, it was a really talented squad, and then it's been a cool thing to see too with a bunch of the teammates that I played with at that 23s levels, between Brian White, Jared Stroud, Chris Lemma. You know, these are all guys that have progressed up the ranks into the first team now. So to kind of see that flow of development through these guys that I was playing with, you know, not too long ago to the first team, it's a pretty cool feeling for sure.
Well, I mean, and you obviously took your direction a little different than a Jared Stroud, a Brian White, someone like that who's worked their way up. You played your college ball, and then you went over to Portadown, Portadown FC, I'm going to take a guess and say that's the letters at the end.
Yeah.
And you played in the Northern Irish second division. How did that come about? Like, where did you get that opportunity? Was there a scout at one of maybe like the USL2 games or collegiate ball?
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. And it's, looking back on it, obviously, it was probably the best decision of my life to take that up. But the way it happened, well, I went back to South Carolina for my USL2 season after my post-grad year. And that was a fantastic experience. You know, we did really well. And, you know, I was definitely getting some attention built up. But then obviously that season was to come to an end, and I was looking at what I wanted to do next. And with the USL season still, they were, I think, towards 3/4 of the way done. It wasn't realistic for me to stay here. And I didn't really necessarily want to stay right out of college in the States. I kind of wanted to go out and go overseas, just because, you know, it's an appealing thing, soccer aside, to have the opportunity to go off into another part of the world and live there and experience a new culture was something that was really appealing to me. But there was, you know, my coach from back home, he had connections there who had needed a goalkeeper and then had seen my highlights and then came to see me play. And then they liked me, and they signed me. And it was one of those things that I had no idea what it was going to be like, whether it could have been a terrible mistake, could have been the worst experience of my life. But it turned out to be the best experience of my life. And I definitely made some amazing friends who've become like family. And for my career, I honestly couldn't ask for much more, because it was such a amazing stepping stone of growth and development for me that I don't think I'd be where I am right now without that part. So I'm forever grateful.
So before I kind of dive into the soccer part of it, you get off the plane, right? You land in Northern Ireland. What's kind of like those first reactions you hit when you finally get to, you know, your new home?
The first thing I remember thinking was it was cold. And that was because I was coming from South Carolina in the middle of the, you know, the summer heat.
Yeah.
And then I had shown up to this place, which wasn't necessarily freezing, probably in the 60s, 70s. But I remember just being like, oh, this is much colder than I've felt in a while. But it was just, it was really crazy. I mean, I hadn't done a lot of international travel up until this point. Occasionally, you know, a vacation when I was younger, but that's it. And so to kind of all of a sudden, you know, not just be at this place for a little bit, it's like, oh, this is going to be my home for the foreseeable future. It was a pretty, I don't want to say culture shock, because I feel like that has a negative implication, but like it was overwhelming, and I enjoyed it. And it was, I'm definitely grateful for how my teammates looked after me right away. I think that also made it a really positive experience for me.
So was it like they looked after you right away, or was it like that first day of training you step on the field and like, I don't know, there is that, you know, connotation about an American soccer player playing in Europe. Did you feel like right away like you had to prove yourself or, like, to your teammates, or was it like after, like, immediately your teammates saw you playing a little bit and it was like, okay, this dude's here to ball?
A little bit of both, to be honest. I mean, they did look after me and made sure that I was kind of sorted and took care of me. But it is also, you know, I knew that I had to kind of show up and play and prove my worth. And it was the manager obviously took care of me well. So I think that, you know, once they kind of realized that, I may also was very aware of the fact that I had to not be super out there when it came to being American. Like, I did not call it soccer. I called it football. I made sure to call it football because I knew that if I showed up and called it soccer, everyone would be like, oh, here we go.
Here it is.
So I was definitely careful with how I acted. I didn't want to stick out as being, I had to make people at least like question whether I was from America until I opened my mouth and spoke and they heard my accent. They'd be like, okay, now he's American for sure. But I didn't want to just be like some, you know, bright flag that said I'm American. But yeah, it was cool. I appreciated how quickly they took to me.
You didn't want to walk out onto that training field the first day wearing red, white, and blue shorts and just calling it and talking to soccer?
Yeah, I just, for some reason, I didn't choose that route. I mean, maybe I would, if I go back, I definitely think I'll do that one.
Yeah, now that you're comfortable, you're like, screw it, I'm American.
Exactly, 100%.
All right. So, I mean, like, you obviously you did well enough in training and you earned that respect because you made over 20 appearances reported down. Once you started kind of playing in net and you started getting a feel for the league and everything like that, how would you compare it to the experiences you had playing collegiate ball and obviously USL League Two before that?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a step up in a lot of different ways. You know, the talent level was a step up, the pressure, the facilities. It was a different feel too. And that was, the facilities is a different one because I'm not going to say that they were all across the board better because, you know, some colleges that we played at had pristine fields that would rival pro clubs here. But there was this atmosphere of their local small community clubs with a lot of supporters within that community. And you can sense that pride within it. So when we went away, you know, it might be a smaller stadium, but it was packed and you could feel an energy and a buzz. And the fans, I mean, they were passionate. You know, this is their life and their passion for family generations. It's been for most of these guys. You know, when I got to meet a lot of the fans of Porter Down, this was a way of life since they were kids. You know, this is what they were brought up in. So to kind of, I think a little bit at first, that was definitely one of my biggest things I had to learn, which, you know, it just goes with any goalkeeper that's just beginning is learning how to manage those high pressure situations. But then once you get into the swing of it, and once the home supporters kind of know who you are, things even out and go a lot smoother. So it was pretty enjoyable once the season got going.
Now, you were on another podcast that I am friends with Travis and Nate, and you were telling a story about how you met Joe Hart and you were able to train a little bit in some other, you know, leagues in Europe. So how does that happen for, like, a player to get a call and, like, do they call Porter Down and they're like, hey, we want Bobby to come train with us for the next week? Is that kind of how it breaks down?
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly how it goes. And that's kind of that was always the plan when I was going there because, you know, the club, they had a clear purpose and that was to win the league and to get promoted. And then for us and for me, it was, okay, I would like to use this as a stone to get to somewhere bigger. And they knew that and they were supportive of that and wanted to, you know, help me accomplish that goal. So they were actually the ones that would set a lot of that up for me. And the manager, Matthew Tipton, was fantastic. He had a lot. He played in the championship in England at Bury and I forget where else, but he had this decorated career, so he had a lot of connections there, but they would contact him directly. And I still remember it was my manager who set that trial up, and he called me into the office and told me, he's like, listen, you're going to go next week to Burnley. My jaw, like, hit the floor. I mean, I can't even explain it to you. Like, I thought I was dreaming, but it was an amazing experience. I mean, those are, you know, no matter what happens in my career and what goes down the line, you know, I want to have this decorated career. It's this one little cool thing right there where I can identify and be like, that's a memory I'll hold on to forever and cherish. So it was a really cool experience that I'm pretty, you know, happy and proud to have experienced.
I remember you, when you were talking with Nate and Travis, you were saying that you were so nervous to ask Joe Hart for a picture, like your hands were shaking. And then I went on your Instagram and I saw the picture and it's like a little blurry. And yeah. I thought, that's hysterical. Like, I just hearing the story, then seeing it, that's a very funny story. How was that conversation with Joe? Like, I, like, you know, just for people listening to this, like, how did that conversation go?
It was crazy because I had been there for almost, I think it was the fifth day. And it was my last day, and they were leaving because they had a game away at Bournemouth. And I had been wanting a picture with him, but I obviously don't want to be that guy that asked for a picture. And then eventually I just thought, oh, okay, it's not going to happen. I was kind of disappointed. But then for whatever reason, you know, Joe was still packing his bags, and then everyone else in the team was still up in the canteen eating their lunch. And so I was like, all right, it's now or never. Like, I got to do it. And so we were just kind of – he actually initiated the conversation with asking, you know, like, oh, you're going back today? Like, do you have a game this weekend? Which was crazy to me. And I was like, Joe Hart is interested in what I'm doing this weekend. Like, that's insanity. But then I just kind of, you know, brought – I like – he could tell I was nervous, but he was just so, you know, warm and open and like, of course, yeah, let's get a photo 100%. And, you know, I can only imagine how many times Joe Hart's taken a picture in his life. I'm – sure, by now in this point, it is very, very old. So I'm greatly appreciative of how warm and receptive he was to, you know, me being able to ask him then.
All right. So your time at Portadown comes to an end, and you, I'm guessing your agent or you get a call from someone within the Major League Soccer offices and saying Cincinnati wants you. What were your initial reactions to coming back to America to play soccer and to Major League Soccer after, you know, you did have that trial with Burnley and you were playing overseas?
Yeah, it was a crazy experience for sure. There was a lot of emotions in it. You know, the Portadown season was actually was still going on. There was about 15 games left, and we were top of the table. And, you know, I mean, I remember getting the call from my agent and when this all came about and it just being one of those things where I just said, oh, I don't know. Like my first initial. And then it took me about, I'd say like I slept on it and thought about it. And then once I woke up the next morning, I remember being like, yeah, like how could I pass this up? Because, you know, the goalkeeper coach here is Jack Stern, who's an amazing human being, an amazing coach. And I've watched his stuff for a while, and I knew who he was, and he's one of the best goalkeeper coaches, you know, around. So one of the biggest attractions for me was, like, I get to work with this guy and take, you know, daily training sessions from this coach. And then I obviously I knew who FC Cincinnati was because I'd watched this team progress in such a short amount of time. They seemed to come out of nowhere, you know, 5 years ago, 2014, I believe, and they came out of nowhere and just were crushing it. And so like I, you know, I was just a kid when the club was founded not too long ago, and watching them in just a short amount of time, just take it to the next level was cool. And I'm being like, yeah, I have to do this. But coming home, that was probably the one thing where I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. I was definitely enjoying my time overseas. And you know, to have that come to an end, was, you know, it's always easy to be comfortable in what you know at the current moment. What I knew was over there and I was enjoying it. But you don't pass up an offer for a team like FC Cincy to stay over there. Like, you have to come home, and 100% the right decision. And I'm very grateful for the club at Portadown and everybody over there who made it such a special time. But, you know, I've been really grateful and blessed to be here where I am now.
Well, I mean, at least you came back to the United States and you didn't pick up an accent like Brad Friedel or Brad. Yeah. Houston, you know, you did it right. You came back with that Jersey accent, which is good to have. But you arrive in Cincinnati, right? I'm guessing you've been in the city for a little bit now. How was that experience compared to that day getting off the plane in Northern Ireland?
It was weird. It was weird because it happened so fast. So I had come home from Northern Ireland and I got home on a Sunday night. And I was flying out to Cincy on Monday morning at 9 a.m. And I got home on Sunday at midnight. So I was at home for less than 12 hours. I literally just went home to sleep for a little bit before I hopped on the next flight. And I was jet lagged, and I remember it being weird just to have dollars in my pocket. That was one of the biggest things I remember, like, oh, right, we're not using British pounds anymore. We're using U.S. dollars. And that was another – my bank card was expired from the States because I needed a new one. And I remember having to pay with everything in cash. So one of the things I remember was I had pretty much all the money. Like, I had, like, a large amount of money just in my pocket. And I was like, oh, my God, I hope I don't get mugged, like, anytime, sometime soon, because, like, that's all my money. But, no, it was really cool. It was, you know, a lot of emotions in a very short amount of time between seeing my family for the first time in a long time to then saying goodbye to my family again. And, you know, obviously they're super tired from staying up with me and picking me up from the airport, and then super tired from waking up really early to driving to the airport. But no, it was a really cool experience for sure.
Well, I mean, week one, you guys, I don't know if you made the trip, but you guys, Cincinnati, you got to go back to New Jersey and go play the Red Bulls. Did you make that trip?
I did. I actually picked up a high ankle sprain, which set me out for, it was only about 3 weeks right before everything, the league kind of, I was about to be back, like, the day that the league shut down. So the 3 weeks prior to the shutdown, I was actually out with this high ankle sprain. But I was, I flew back home and was there at the game, and it was a really amazing experience because that was the first time I'd seen a lot of my extended family in a long time. So they all took the trip out. I had my entire family there. A lot of my coaches from, you know, my youth had come out to take the trip. And it was a special moment for me for sure. Especially against Red Bull, obviously. That's, you know, the hometown club. So it was really cool. And it was another really special thing to see the traveling away fans up, you know, in the supporter section all these miles away. And they've still made the journey and they're still singing up there. And so getting to have, you know, that experience with my family, to see what I'm part of, it was really cool.
I mean, we can definitely call that the Bobby Edwards Derby, I think. I think that's what we're going to call it, Cincinnati versus Red Bulls. But you arrived to the club, right? You have TT there. You have Spencer Ritchie there. How have they been? Like, how is, like, a goalkeeper, I guess, like, film room? Like, you know how they say, like, a quarterback room for the NFL? Like, how's, like, a goalkeeper room with, like, three guys on the roster?
Yeah, they've been amazing. You know, they've kind of taken me under their wings right away to help me learn and develop and to settle in. But for, you know, like the goalkeeper union, that whole classroom, it all depends on what the culture is. And that's a big belief. You know, if you follow Jack with what he does as a coach, that is probably his core principle, talking about what that culture is. So for us, no one's going to work harder for us. That's one of the staples of us as goalkeepers. You know, we might have an off day, but nobody's ever going to outwork us. Mm. And then to always positively push each other. You know, there's no, you know, you can't hide away from the fact that the goalkeeper position is one that's naturally competitive. Only one person will play and then the other ones won't. And that's just the way it works. So when you have that competitive environment, it's important that it's a positive competitive environment. We're pushing each other to get better, and we're supporting each other's, you know, while this competitiveness is still going on. You know, it's easy in competitive environments to turn toxic, and that's something that's not all right. Yeah. We have to make sure that, you know, my role especially is to push TT and Spence to become better. I'm obviously learning and trying to become a better goalkeeper myself, but I need to make sure that I'm doing everything I can to make them better. And then that's how it works all the way around. But, you know, that's one of the things that the culture of the group is stressed, and that's of heavy importance. So it's top down as well. You know, that's something, it's easy to just mandate something as a coach, but Jack is also someone who preaches it by practicing it, which is, it's a refreshing thing for sure.
I mean, well, you're going to get your opportunity to start pushing them once again because MLS has, you know, reinstated the outdoor individual training, obviously following all the legal processes that we have to follow going on right now. But are you guys excited to get back on that field and train a little bit?
Tom, you don't even know. You don't even know. I can't wait. You know, we've obviously on our own been trying to get to, like, local fields and do work that will keep us in shape and, you know, get touches on the ball as best we can. But Milford, I mean, the training facility at FC, it's superb. You know, beautiful pitch, you know, just a great place to be. And to be there, even if it's, you know, on solo workouts, is a really exciting thing. You know, it's one that we're just kind of learning about it now. You know, I honestly don't know too much about the return to play or anything like that. But it's one where, you know, there's no playbook for them. So it's one where we as players have to kind of be patient to, you know, see this through to make sure that everyone's taken care of in a safe and accounted for way. But yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am to be back. Whenever that is, hopefully, apparently soon.
Yeah, and sorry about that train that went by. That was just my excitement. That was the excitement train going by. That was, you know, we're ready for it.
Yeah.
But the last question I want to ask you is, how have you been spending this quarantine, right? Like, no one really has any idea of what's going on, like you just said, but, like, how have you been passing the time? Has it been a lot of FIFA? Has it been a lot of, I don't know, other hobbies that you have?
Yeah, well, I've definitely, you know, it's workouts have kind of been the most important thing, and to do a daily workout of some sort has kind of been, you know, that's like the one thing I make sure every day I do. I room with another teammate, Zico, which has made it a lot better, because just being on your own is not necessarily, you know, you need the social interaction. Zico's an amazing guy, and just be able to kind of joke around with him makes it a lot better. But yeah, it's been one where we just try not to get bored. And to be honest, like, some days are definitely easier than others. There's certain days that it's tough to, like, wake up and be like, okay, what are we going to do today? Probably the same thing as yesterday. But you got to kind of push through that. And to sit here and, you know, it's all right to be honest and say, well, you know, that sometimes it's hard, because it's been hard for everybody. But to make sure that, you know, just keep and follow a routine has kind of been my key to my success personally, to make sure that even on days where, you know, you lack that motivation, to just go out and accomplish something, whether it's, all right, we're just going to do a bike workout, or all right, we're going to do this task that we have to do. It just helps you stay productive, keep the mind engaged. So it's definitely been like a work in progress, would probably be one way to say it, but it's been a journey I've learned a lot on, for sure. Ready for the journey to kind of come to a close soon, hopefully, but like trying to take the positives away for sure.
I know I said that was my last question, but I do have one more.
No, absolutely.
So when Bobby Edwards isn't on a soccer field or isn't training, what's he doing for fun? What's your thing that kind of just gets you away from it all and you can just chill and do you?
I love dogs. Like, that's probably like the one thing that rivals soccer. I'm the biggest dog lover ever. Back home in Jersey, with two golden doodles. As of late, like, that's been one of the things that's also been driving me crazy on this quarantine, is I'm not able to, like, go out and ask to pet people's dogs, or, like, if I see a dog walking down the street, it's, you know, it's got to respect the social distancing. So I would say you could find me somewhere trying to pet a dog. That's my, you know, my other love. I like to think I'm a fun guy that enjoys life and enjoys to laugh, and I would probably be somewhere laughing, to be honest with you.
Awesome. Well, if you're an FC Cincinnati fan listening to this and you have a dog, find Bobby Edwards and you guys hang out a little bit.
Yes, 100%.
Thank you for coming on the podcast, man. It was great talking to you and getting to meet you, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. It was it's definitely been a great event of the day.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you to Bobby Edwards for that.
What an interview. Impeccable interviewing.
Jason, you know, I don't think you've heard the interview yet, man.
We just listened to it.
The power of editing.
Dude, I was there. I was there while it was happening.
We just listened to it. What are you talking about?
A couple times.
Yeah.
You didn't want to talk up when Bobby was talking a little bit? You didn't have any questions for him?
I was just was really talking about how he
lives in New Jersey. I was like, but Tom's from New York, so it's like,
no. Well, it's an And you guys are joking around, but a sincere, honest thank you to Bobby. It was cool to talk to him. He was also on the You Ain't Lying podcast, which is our FC Cincinnati podcast, which is hosted by Travis Grimes and Nate Hale. So if you want to hear a little bit more about Bobby, you can go onto their podcast on all your favorite podcasting streaming services and check it out there. But
wait, no lie, though, goalkeepers, best bit of soccer players.
Yeah, so, he talked about he talked a little goalkeeper union and stuff like that. He's into the goalkeeper union. So it's a real thing after talking to him. I think he's the first goalkeeper I've had on the podcast.
You had Mitch Hildebrand on the podcast?
That's a lie. I only have FC Cincinnati goalkeepers on the podcast.
Apparently. Oh, man. Every time I hear that name, I think of how insane he played against the Fire. What is that, 2017 now? Oh.
Yep. Mitch says no, bro. Mitch says no.
Yeah, and he hasn't gone back to Cincinnati since.
It was an insane game, though. It was insane.
If you guys want to know more about Mitch Hildebrand, then definitely check out, and find the Mitch Hildebrand interview I did. But yeah, all right. So we talked a lot of women's soccer, but kind of transitioning over from the interview from Bobby and about his time as a goalkeeper, I do want to talk about the U.S. men's national team a little bit too. And we have a goalkeeper issue of our own. Zach Steffen once again is injured. Apparently, he sprained his MCL. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. And we did hear back today that the Bundesliga is starting back up. So Fortuna Dusseldorf, this is the team that Zach Steffen plays goalkeeper for. They are in a relegation fight, and I think losing Steffen for 4 to 6 weeks kind of hurts their chances of staying up in the Bundesliga. But I kind of wanted to talk to you guys about Steffen on like a USMNT scale. Are you getting concerned about his ability to stay healthy? And Sam, since you're our goalkeeper correspondent, I'll toss it to you.
I just want to know, he was on the team training ground when he got injured. What the fuck, man? This is coronavirus time. Stay the fuck home. Like, I don't know. I mean, let's be honest. When Zach Steffen's healthy, he is the best goalkeeper in the goalkeeping pool.
He's our one.
In terms of distribution, in terms of shot stopping, he's 100% the best one. It does kind of seem weird that he's been getting injured, but again, he's young. What is he, like 24, 25?
Yeah, he's less than 25. I think he's 23, 24.
Yeah, like he's a young goalkeeper, you know, still, and the fact that he's getting as many 25. Minutes he is at such a young age is nothing but good. So I'm not too much worried about it as much as I just want to get him back on the field, and any minutes he can get, the better. There it is. So, I don't know. It's just I want him to be healthy and playing. It's unfortunate that all of a sudden the Bundesliga is ready to start back up and he's going to be sidelined.
I agree with that, because he's having – when he was playing and playing for Dusseldorf, even though the team wasn't having the success, you know, there are a lot of reports coming out of Germany that he's proved himself to be a top-of-the-line goalkeeper when he's healthy and playing in net. So it'd be interesting to see kind of how Man City handles that. If he gets sold somewhere, maybe somewhere else in the Bundesliga, or he goes on loan again somewhere else in the Bundesliga next season. And obviously – this is all assuming that soccer is being played normally relatively soon. But, Jason, are you getting concerned about Zach Steffen's injury history, especially kind of early on in his goalkeeping career now?
Well, I like to listen to my friend Sam here talk about goalkeepers.
What a kiss ass.
I love Jason. What a great guy.
Thank you. Anyways, as far as your question goes, I'd say...
I don't know where we're going with this.
I knew why.
What do you mean? I'm just trying to answer fairly.
You're right.
Anyway, I think that, you know, I am maybe a bit concerned just because I'm like, bruh, stop getting injured. But at the same time, like, everything that Sam said is true. Like, he's the number one in the pool for us. And I have, like, full faith in the guy. I think he's great. I like watching him, but please just, like, stop getting injured.
Yeah.
And like, be more careful, man.
Well, because you're eventually going to turn into Josie Altidore, where every single major competition that comes around, it's like, sprained his ankle. Damn, can't play. Or his groin's hurt. Ah, shit, can't play. It's what's going to eventually happen.
Where, like, bubble wrap. We have Baldy to back him up.
Hey, so that's where I was going to next, Sam. So you're really good over there.
John Johnson.
A lot of people are talking about, like, you know, since Stefan's been hurt, who do we have in the pool that's really able to kind of step in? Some people are saying Ethan Horvath. The dude's not playing, so I don't really know how you can make an argument for him. You also been having, like you said, Jason, Sean Johnson, someone near and dear to both our hearts. Bill like Hamid. I'd like to throw Bill Hamid in that player pool.
Yeah, but they don't think he's American, apparently.
Yo, Triple G got him in the last camp. So maybe we're taking steps towards the right direction with getting Bill Hamid back.
He's US. Self-proclaimed best in the pool, though.
I mean, he is, in my opinion. and probably Sam's opinion, too. But Sam, you said Brad Guzan. He's still around. He's still chilling, doing his thing. Maybe Bobby Edwards gets in there one day, but... To me, I really feel like this could potentially open up a huge opportunity for David Ochoa to maybe eventually in 2-3 years win that starting keeper spot over Stefan. I don't know. Sam, yeah. I want to hear what you have to take on that.
I mean, Ochoa is very good at a young age, much as Stefan was. And I mean, this was his year, like, wasn't it? He was going to be... the starter in St. Louis and Salt Lake.
So what I've been reading about Ochoa and that Salt Lake thing was that if the normal soccer schedule obviously was like went right, Ochoa was the clear number one for the U-20s in the Olympic team, right? So yeah. I think that the reason why he started out again this season with the Monarchs and USL Championship was because... like RSL clearly wants a consistent goalkeeper in net, and if Ochoa was gonna be gone for a decent amount of time with the Olympics, like they didn't want that like bouncing back and forth, so that's why they had Zach McMath there. So you're right, this was gonna be Ochoa's year between the Olympics and potentially having some success there, and then on top of that, maybe coming back and winning that starting spot back over McMath, or even if he didn't, fine, he was gonna be the keeper for the Monarchs again for a season.
I think if you give him a couple years of just, again, it's the same thing with Stefan, give him years of starting experience, and I think Ochoa is gonna be a really good goalkeeper in our pool. If he doesn't take starting spot, he's going to be that number two like Guzan was to Tim Howard.
I just think that if Stefan keeps on missing big opportunities and eventually David Ochoa is eventually going to get his shot, right? Like if Stefan misses a tournament, Berhalter feels Ochoa is ready. Ochoa gets a shot to start.
Stefan hasn't missed a tournament yet, though, has he?
He missed the Gold Cup. Didn't he?
I thought that was more of he was doing a transfer thing. Was he injured? I don't remember.
I think he missed the Gold Cup, but I don't exactly remember. I actually think I could be wrong about that. But whatever.
Just Googling. You guys keep talking. All
right, but I mean, Jason, what's your take? Like, it doesn't have to be about David Ochoa exactly, but who do you, if it is Ochoa, or who do you think could potentially be that potential long-term or even short-term replacement for Stefan?
I mean, for me, like, I like that Ochoa thought. Like, I think there's a ton of room for growth, and everything I've seen from him has been pretty positive. I honestly just don't know enough at this point to think that he could be up there. Like, obviously, projection-wise, it'd be great to have him up there, and there's a good chance of it because of, you know, how successful he's been so far. But I think losing this year actually really hurts him and, like, a lot of our younger players. For, like, obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But other than Ochoa, like you said, Bill Hamid's great. But I think Sean Johnson has a good shot for number two, in my opinion. I just think he's consistent. He's good. Obviously, I'm a bit biased towards him. But
so am I. It's fun.
I mean, I think he's delivered pretty well in his, you know, time on the field. Plus, like, I keep going back to I forget who we were playing, but he was in goal for the U.S., and he just put that outlet pass, like, halfway down the field. Yeah. That was just beautiful. I don't know if you remember that, but...
he's done that for the Fire so many times, and he's done that for New York City so many times.
I like that delivery, and he's good at decision-making, I think. Like, the fact that he even thought to be like, hey, I just saved this ball. I just got the ball. Look up the field instantly, you know, gut decision, put it, and he put it on a platter. Like, I think he's got a good opportunity to be the number two, at least.
I mean, I would be okay with Sean Johnson being our, Sam, like you said, like our Brad Guzan that we had.
He's a friend of the pod.
Totally, yep. He's a friend of the pod, too.
What's up, Stefan?
Yeah,
Stefan's been on the pod.
Stefan has been on the pod.
That's another goalkeeper that you just missed.
I didn't do that interview. That's, I forgot.
Oh, no, that's why.
Right.
Yeah.
So just to help out, Stefan started 5 of the 6 Gold Cup matches in 2019.
Okay, I was wrong then. I feel like I don't remember what he missed.
Look at that research.
Maybe it was January camp that I'm really just thinking of, but whatever.
Who knows?
I think he's been injured. I don't know, like this injury, but like on MLSsoccer.com, it's just, they aren't really talking about him as like overly injured. Like they said, he started all 17 matches before the layoff and that he was the starter all the time as the loney. I don't know. It doesn't say anything really about his injuries. The club says he has an inner ligament injury.
Yep. Inner MCL sprain.
God.
Your MCL is your inner ligament on your thigh. I've torn that before, so yeah.
I have also torn that before, twins. Thank you.
I have never torn that before.
I've torn my MCL and my ACL. Opposite knees, though.
Oh.
Neither.
Yeah. It sucks. So, sorry, Zach. Hope you get better soon.
Yeah, it hurts.
I think I want to touch on the big news, and since we are an MLS podcast, mostly, for the most part, today, or yesterday, if you're listening to this, on the 6th of May, Major League Soccer has allowed players to go back for individual trainings, outdoor individual trainings. So I kind of took a little bit of a deeper dive into what that meant, because I didn't really know what individual trainings were. Apparently, the teams have to send individual training plans to Major League Soccer to get pre-approved, and players can have to stick to this plan like to a T. Coaches are there to, from a distance. There's doctors on staff that are checking the temperature of every single player and coach and anyone else walking in every single morning and when they leave and when they get there and then when they leave. And then you still have to keep your distance, everything like that. So to me, it seems like these teams in Major League Soccer are taking every precaution possible. I just hope that they are, because, you know, as soon as you get one positive case, then this whole thing is going to get blown up. So I'm just extremely happy that Major League Soccer is taking the steps to be back and that these steps are seemingly and hopefully, crossing my fingers, as safe as possible. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on it.
I mean,
it seems weird.
I've heard the same stuff, but I've also, like, since I'm a season ticket holder for the Fire, like, we get a couple of emails every once in a while, like, updating. And they've said, like, yeah, there's possibilities that games will resume and, like, limited fans or, like, you'll have to sit further apart from people if they allowed fans in. So, but I don't know how it's going to work.
I can't believe you have season tickets and there's a fucking pandemic going
on. I feel so bad for
time,
you.
Too.
Jason was, like, adulting and then, like,
right?
Nope.
I spent money. I need to get my season ticket gift.
I'm enjoying my life over here. That's all it is. Oh, fuck.
Okay. They'll roll over, I hope.
So
yeah, I hope so.
Let's say like July 1st, right? Or June 1st. I don't know. I'm just taking random shots in the dark that games begin back up for Major League Soccer. In your perfect worlds, and I don't know if you guys need a little bit of time, so let me know if you do. What do you think the rest of the season should look like to, because Major League Soccer still come out and said that they want to play every single game.
No.
All the games. So, which seems
absolutely
fucking
not. Awesome.
Injuries, like, insane amounts.
Exactly. No. So,
not worth it.
To me, a perfect world would be somewhat of like a modified US Open Cup type situation. You play regional games. And maybe at the end of these regional seasons, you take the top two from each So the top two from the East, top two from the West, maybe top two from like the Midwest and the South. And then they play in like an 8-game tournament. And then there's your MLS Cup champion for the year with maybe with a little asterisk next to it. I don't know. This is what, like, somewhat of a brainstorm I was doing. Obviously, there's a lot more logistics and details that need to go into it. But I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on what you would like to see or what you think would potentially work.
World Cup style.
Ooh,
you want Chicago to win the World Cup. Fuck you.
Call it the MLS World Cup.
Groups of four. Top two move on to a knockout tournament.
I don't know why I didn't think of a World Cup style bracket, but I mean, I love it.
You're not from Chicago.
Yeah, we are experienced in winning World Cups in Chicago.
It would only be good if Bastian Schweinsteiger was on the team, though.
we bring him back. He's the asterisk. Every team gets a Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Assistant coach.
we're cloning him.
I feel like that's going to cause the second coming of coronavirus. Like, we don't clone him.
Probably wouldn't be great. Probably
don't clone him.
It's just not.
Sam, did you have any ideas or any thoughts? It's okay if you don't. Just I threw this out.
I don't know. The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm just thinking it is so unlikely that we're going to see like a lot of games here in the U.S. because the U.S. is just inundated with coronavirus, and I think we kind of have to accept that eventually we're going to all find out there are no sports for us to watch this year.
I think the Bundesliga will be like a good case study.
Yeah, probably. But Germany also, again, like they're having less cases. I don't know about you guys, but I have a feeling I'm going to be on lockdown here for a while.
Yeah, I mean more so from like an injury standpoint too, though.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say one. I agree with you with the actual cases. Like I said during like when I was talking about the training, I feel like as soon as one positive case hits, like boom, that's it. Snap. Everyone's going back into lockdown, and this shit isn't coming out until like numbers are like cut into fucking thirds, you know?
Yeah, if a player gets it, like league shuts down.
A player gets it, a coach gets it, an event staff member gets it.
Yeah, literally anyone.
You know, I mean, that's going to cut it. And then two, Jason, like you were saying with injuries, I was listening to some podcasters. I was watching something Major League Soccer related, and someone was saying that Brendan Aaronson. they were talking to Brendan Aaronson, obviously 19-year-old or 18-year-old for the Union, and they asked them, like, off – you know, screen, like they were like, you know, how many games do you think you would need to play to get back into like season shape? And he was like, only one probably, but I can't imagine a 34-year-old, a 32-year-old, even a 30-year-old is going to get back into game shape after one game. It's probably going to take them longer. So injuries could also pile up, you know?
Definitely.
Sam, so, I know I cut you off. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're good. So this is more of just like a random ass thought. So one thing that came out about like the coronavirus was that one of your symptoms was after the fact you had reduced lung capacity and everything. And so I'm sitting here thinking that some of these professional players in like Italy who got it, could you imagine if like Paulo Dybala all of a sudden like couldn't run as far like or as fast or for as long because coronavirus after he got it like reduced his lung capacity? If some of these professional athletes all of a sudden get this and they can't do their job, the job they are paid to do because they got sick because we rushed them back too soon, and then they're fucked, like, I don't know, like, I mean, I probably wouldn't feel terrible because it wouldn't have been me that did it, but, like, that'd be pretty messed up.
No, I can agree with you. I also feel like, you know, that may hurt their value in the whole soccer market in general. They start having a bad season because
they'll never play again.
Exactly. Like, I mean, look, so out there, someone is going to take the risk. If Juventus is like, fuck Dybala, you know, someone is going to take
the risk.
Yeah, like DC United will grab him in a heartbeat. Don't worry. But like, someone's going to take the risk on him and be like, it's probably, you know, the pandemic that happened. Someone's going to think logically about it. But I mean, like, there are probably smaller players out there who we haven't heard about who may have got it or whatever. And that could potentially hurt their careers as well and the way they make money and everything, you know? And I mean, obviously, look, looking at the grand scheme of it, it's hurting everyday people with everyday jobs, like, making their own money. So, like, am I going to feel bad for a soccer player making a lot of money? No and yes in the same token. But it's this whole thing is just – it's tough. It really is.
It hits everyone, honestly. Yeah,
exactly.
Everyone's affected. Everyone will be.
I got one more thing to talk about, and then we'll close out this episode. Some MLS rumors, and maybe some, like, less rumors and more, like, actual, like, things that came out. But Gareth Bale, he made a few comments about Major League Soccer within these past week and a half, 2 weeks, saying that he would love to play in MLS one day. He vacations in L.A. a lot. And
he likes the golf.
And he likes the golf. So, I mean, L.A. is your spot, bro. So, you know, maybe one day when LAFC move on from Carlos Vela, they bring in Gareth Bale to be the vet leadership. I don't know. I would like to see it.
Didn't he talk about Inter Miami as well?
So Inter Miami was three other players named for Inter Miami.
It wasn't Gareth Bale. Why did I think it was Gareth Bale?
So Inter Miami, apparently there's a bunch of rumors going on around Arturo Vidal and Inter Miami, and someone who's really good at Photoshop put an Inter Miami jersey on Arturo Vidal's body, and he reposted it to his Instagram like story, and immediately took it down like 30 minutes later. So
you love to see those kind of posts.
Vidal would start just like shredding people, like just put his cleats into someone's chest. Like
I would not want my team to play him.
Yeah, me neither.
Because he definitely wouldn't care because he would get a huge paycheck to live in Miami.
So Miami Miami have two DPs.
Because Miami's nice.
I think.
It's very nice.
And there's rumors that Vidal is gonna come over as soon as his time with Barcelona is done. And there's also a pretty heavy rumor, James Rodriguez, but he's been floating around everywhere, so I don't know how much I believe that one. But, like, I really would be interested to see how Miami do. Well, I guess everything gets affected now, but whenever there's another transfer window, I really would be interested to see if Miami do make these moves for a Vidal or even a James or Gareth Bale, if you heard that, Jason.
Two games in. You love to see them making moves.
I'd love to see it. love seeing it. And then the last MLS rumor I heard was Juan Mata. That one was a shot in left field, but the 32-year-old Spanish international apparently has been rumored to be connected to the Chicago Fire and FC Cincinnati. I don't really see, like, a guy of Juan Mata's stature being like, yup, I'm coming to America, and Skyline Chile in Cincinnati is where I'm going. Like, I don't really see it, but, look, shit, I could be wrong. Maybe he's a big Cincinnati guy.
I don't know if he'd be worth the amount of money that he probably is demanding.
You don't – I mean, I think he'd have – I think he'd have some success.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if he'd be worth, like, I don't have a number, but he'd be demanding a decent amount of money.
That's all I got, guys. Do you have anything soccer related, life related, you want to say to us or the people?
I miss you guys.
Me too.
I can't wait for a road trip after we're allowed to, like, cross state lines and shit.
See you in 2030.
Soccer road trip eventually.
So
I'm supposed to be going to Colorado this summer. Like, fuck. I'm waiting for those plans to get canceled.
I have two soccer trips that I really want to do, and they both of the ideas have come about during this quarantine. One, Jason, when we were tweeting back and forth at each other about Stars, that brewery
Revolution.
They like followed me. And they said we're welcome. And
there's a brewery?
Yep, there's a brewery in Chicago that said
you have to come now.
They followed me and they said,
I mean, it's literally my job, so
they're
like a major US they're just like a major Chicago brewery too.
Apparently. First beer on them, so I'm holding you guys to that.
Cheers to that.
Yep. And then maybe we can hit up a Forward Madison game and a Fire game and do like a big soccer weekend. I'm cool with that. And then also now Cincinnati, if Bobby Edwards ever wants to get a beer, and we got some boys over in Cincinnati too, then maybe that's a soccer trip too. I don't know.
We can all meet there too. It's kind of in the middle, which is nice.
Is it?
Huh. It's in the middle of Chicago and New York, essentially.
I mean, look, there's
that's
a
just straight shit. Geography, my friend.
There's a lot of shit in the middle of Chicago and New York.
Yeah, but that's one of the things.
Louisiana is technically in the middle of Chicago and New York, but I'm not saying.
I disagree.
I am worried about you guys. Quarantine has done something to you.
My brain.
Turns out Tom just doesn't know geography.
I don't. My brain's fucking fried right now, man. It's, I don't know. And I've done 3 interviews this week. It's just not.
You know where you are.
I don't. I think I'm home. All right, guys, before this gets too fucking bad and cringy at the end, I'm going to say thank you guys. I'm going to say thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Roughneck Scars and Icarus FC. Make sure you guys go and check them out. Yeah, peace.
Yeah.
Peace.
Peace.